Coming up, the Threshold Choir, volunteers around the world who sing to the dying. And in this season of giving, Kim Lawton profiles Mercy Chefs, a charity that recruits professional chefs to donate their cooking skills to help victims of natural disasters. Plus, Jews in San Antonio following the call to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Tens of thousands of civilians in Syria were caught in the crossfire this week as the Russian-backed Syrian government battled rebels for final control of Aleppo. There were many reports of horrific human rights abuses. Pope Francis personally appealed to Syrian President Assad, asking that international humanitarian law be observed and civilians protected. In an unusual move, the Vatican released the letter publicly. At the United Nations Security Council, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power sharply condemned Syria, Russia, and Iran for not doing more to stop the killing.
Is there no act of barbarism against civilians, no execution of a child that gets under your skin, that just creeps you out a little bit? Is there nothing you will not lie about or justify?
Some conservative Christians are disappointed that President-elect Donald Trump nominated ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson to be Secretary of State. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council said he was concerned because Tillerson helped convince the Boy Scouts of America to admit gay youths when he led the organization from 2010 to 2012. ExxonMobil also contributes to Planned Parenthood. Meanwhile, a diverse coalition of religious groups gathered in Washington this week to deliver a petition signed by 2,500 faith leaders, raising concerns about other Trump appointees. The petition called on Trump to reject bigotry and appoint more tolerant advisors.
These unprecedented, radical appointments threaten our very democracy and degrade our national values. People of color, immigrants, religious minorities, and those of us who stand with them are alarmed, and as people of faith, we will stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters.
Among those gathered was Muslim Kaiser Khan, the father of a U.S. Army captain killed in Iraq.
My faith teaches that our Creator never puts His creation in jeopardy without providing the solution. It's a matter of reaching out to Him. I reached out and I found the solution.
Interfaith vigils were held across the nation this week to mark the fourth anniversary of the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. 20 children and 6 school staff members were killed in that tragedy. Vigil organizers renewed calls for stricter gun control. At the service in Washington, participants mourned all victims of shootings with a procession of families who have lost loved ones. Leaders urged perseverance in the fight to end gun violence. A jury found 22-year-old Dylan Roof guilty of killing 9 black worshipers at a church in Charleston, South Carolina in 2015. Roof is an avowed white supremacist. Jurors found him guilty on 33 charges, including murder, hate crimes, and obstruction of religion. Jurors will determine whether Roof will receive life in prison or the death penalty in the next phase of the trial, which is scheduled to begin in January. Ohio Governor John Kasich vetoed a bill that would have banned abortion after the first detectable fetal heartbeat. Kasich, however, did sign into law a bill that bans abortions after 20 weeks, with no exceptions for rape or incest. In Texas, abortion rights groups filed a lawsuit challenging a new law that requires that fetal remains be buried or cremated after miscarriages or abortions. A federal judge blocked the law from taking effect until the case is resolved. Meanwhile, the state's Catholic cemeteries have announced they plan to offer to bury any fetal remains at no cost. A new study from the Pew Research Center has found that religious minorities in the U.S. are better educated than the Christian majority. For instance, 96% of American Hindus and 54% of Muslims hold a college degree. Only 36% of Christians in the U.S. have graduated from college. Worldwide, Jews are more highly educated than any other religious group, followed by Christians and the religiously unaffiliated. There was widespread international condemnation of last Sunday's bombing at a chapel next to Cairo's main Coptic Orthodox Cathedral. At least 25 Coptic Christians were killed, mainly women and children, and dozens more were injured. The Coptic Pope, Tewodros II, presided over funeral services. Copts make up about 10% of the population in Egypt. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom called on the Egyptian government to do a better job of protecting its Christian minority. We have a very special story today about singing to people who are dying. There's a group that began in California and now carries out its ministry in 130 communities around the world, going into hospitals and hospices to comfort patients in the last stages of their lives by singing to them softly. With appropriate permissions, we recently accompanied a Washington, D.C. Threshold group.
Let's go first into a warm-up song. Let's do There You Are. Those of you who know the song, try not to look at your music. And those of you who are still learning it, look at it all you want.
There you are, in the quiet of this moment, here I am.
When we sing to a patient, we are sending them love. We are wishing them well on their journey. We are saying we're all in this together. They are still very much alive until they're not. And they are sharing their time with us. And they're going through something that none of us have gone through yet. And so in a way, they are our teachers. And so we are learning also from them on how to do this thing called dying.
Our members come from lots of different backgrounds, which is one thing I really appreciate about our particular Threshold Choir. That, to me, is a real richness about our choir. Some people come with some hospice background, or if not, as a hospice volunteer, maybe experience taking care of someone who's died. Other people come without any of that, and sometimes maybe with some trepidation about, I don't know if I can do this. For those people who thought, I don't know if I can be there, how can I be there right at the bedside of someone who's dying and be able to control my emotions or be able to sing clearly. And many of our members have spoken, those who sing at the bedside have spoken about that ability that they found within themselves to be able to be present. It takes some preparation.
In the quiet of this moment.
When we rehearse, we enjoy the singing part of it, and we enjoy being together. At rehearsal, there's laughter, there's fun, there's a sense of well-being often, the experience of singing, you know, these beautiful songs physically feels good, right? And then when we're at the bedside, there's often a sense of well-being in that exchange between us and the people we're singing to. There's a kind of uplift that the music and the words provide.
There's another thing at rehearsal that we do that is a really special experience, is that when people are closer to being able to ready to sing at bedside, because it is a process, you need to learn the music, you need to be comfortable with the experience. So we set up a chair, a lounge chair, so that the people can practice being sung to and singing to somebody who is about to pass. The songs we sing speak to people of all religions, all races. They speak of grace and love and peace and resting. At request, we will sing other songs. We certainly sing Christian songs and from other religions as well. When we come to a facility, usually the three of us will meet here and we'll rehearse, just go through who's going to sing what parts to the songs, what songs we'll likely do.
Amazing Grace and Simple Gifts.
Okay. We'll have a short rehearsal before. We will do a small ritual of centering ourselves as a group to get ourselves present before we go into the room. Before we enter a room, we don't know what is beyond the door. We open the door or pull back a curtain, and we usually don't know how alert the patient is going to be. So we come in and we introduce ourselves, even if the person is unconscious, because this is their home. We are coming into their home and saying, may we share some time with you.
I'd like to sing some songs to you today.
And we would love to sing, would you like to be sung to? And then we have one person who has volunteered to be the anchor for that day. That is, we call the person who is sort of leading the day's experience of singing with patients. And she intuits what songs would be best at that moment. She will start a song, and the other two, three of us will join in. We sing until the anchor decides the song is ended. And then we'll rest a little bit, because sometimes those poignant pauses between the songs are very precious. And then the anchor will intuit the next song. And she'll start singing, and the rest of us will join in until it's time to go. And we stand up and say thank you, and we leave.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to just sing with you and spend a little time with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's our pleasure. Thank you.
We'll do a little debriefing after the singing is over, and we'll just talk to make sure how did we all feel about what we just experienced musically as well as personally, and then just how are we all doing emotionally.
And I felt like, you know, I really wanted
because
to
it can be very emotional when we're with people in such this honest, raw, sacred moment.
It was like each one of them, when we started to sing, became more alert and their breathing got better.
We also make sure that we're all okay before we drive home. So that's very important, because part of our group and part of bonding is that we care for our singers as well. Yes, we're giving to the patients, but it's a gift to us too, to learn to be centered, to learn to be loving, to learn to just be present with somebody in such a sacred moment.
During this Christmas season, many Americans have a special focus on giving to people in need. Today, Kim Lawton looks at a Christian charity called Mercy Chefs. The group encourages professional chefs, some of the best in the nation, to donate their cooking skills to help others during natural disasters and national emergencies. The chefs say they're spreading hope through good meals.
The Christmas season is always a festive time in San Antonio, Texas, where the famous Riverwalk is blanketed with lights and local restaurants offer special holiday treats. At the French-inspired Bakery Lorraine, which earlier this year was dubbed the city's hottest bakery, pastry chef Jeremy Mandel and his team are whipping up Christmas sweets, including seasonal flavors of their highly popular signature macaroons. Just a few months ago, Mandel was doing a very different kind of cooking. As a volunteer with the nonprofit group Mercy Chefs, he helped prepare thousands of meals every day for victims of this summer's catastrophic flooding in Louisiana.
It was very rewarding cooking for people that actually need it and not just because they want to, you know, want to eat at your restaurant. It was really just nice to be able to help somebody in need.
Mercy Chefs is a Christian charity supported by donations. Its stated mission is to provide professionally prepared, restaurant-quality meals to victims and first responders during natural disasters and national emergencies. The group was founded 10 years ago by Chef Gary LeBlanc. LeBlanc was working in the hotel industry in Virginia when Hurricane Katrina hit his hometown of New Orleans. He wanted to help and volunteered as a cook for some of the relief groups working in the area. But he wasn't pleased with how meals were being prepared.
It bothered me, the lack of sanitation and food safety, and time and temperature controls. There was no passion, there was no love, there was no professionalism with the food. Now there are times you just get food out, and I understand that, but I really thought there was a better way to do it.
When an emergency strikes, the group deploys mobile kitchens, a refrigerated trailer, and a team of professional chefs who partner with local volunteers. They've worked amid hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, wildfires, and other crises, such as the rioting in Baltimore in 2015 after the death of a black man in police custody. Although Mercy Chefs is a non-denominational Christian group, LeBlanc says their volunteer chefs come from diverse faith backgrounds.
These are people that are master chefs in their own rights, recognized in the industry and recognized among their peers. These chefs come and volunteer their time with us. So anytime Mercy Chefs is out, there are professionally trained chefs, full credentials, that are in the kitchen doing the best food possible.
LeBlanc bristles at those who question whether victims in a crisis really need a gourmet meal.
To come to a disaster area, folks that have lost everything, and share a meal with them brings some semblance of hope. And you should do that over a good meal, the best meal you're able to make.
The group stays ready so that it can react quickly when disaster strikes.
A lot of times we'll be the first people pulling in town to offer outside relief to a community that's been affected.
This summer, Mercy Chefs was on site in Baton Rouge while floodwaters were still rising. They set up in the parking lot of a local megachurch, Bethany Church, and congregation members stepped in to help prepare, pack, and deliver the meals. During the height of the disaster, Mercy Chefs made nearly 10,000 meals every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
There you go. Thank you, guys.
In San Antonio, Chef Mandel watched reports of the unfolding devastation caused by the flooding and felt compelled to do something. He was searching online for relief groups, and when he saw Mercy Chefs, he knew that was the one.
I would have done anything. I would have mucked out houses if they needed it. I just wanted to help. But to be able to do something that I'm actually good at was really nice.
Doing well? Jambalaya treating you all right? Thank you guys for coming. Appreciate it. Y'all enjoy.
Mandel contacted his friend Peter Sipeston, who's the chef owner of San Antonio's Cookhouse, a popular New Orleans-style restaurant. Sipeston is from Louisiana. The two headed to the flood zone. They drove for more than 8 hours, and as soon as they arrived, Mercy Chefs put them to work.
Changed my shirt and got on the truck and started cooking. We weren't the boss, which is actually kind of nice to be able to go and just say, what do you need? And they tell you, and it's like, yes, chef, I'm on it.
Sipeston says they were overwhelmed by the grateful responses they received for their efforts.
To think that there's 40,000 people displaced, what help is it going to be for me and Jeremy to go and help? When we got there, it was very apparent that the two people going in to help made a big difference.
While disaster relief is Mercy Chef's primary focus, the group tries to use its resources in other ways as well. One major area is urban outreach, where they provide nutritionally rich meals in low-income communities. This past Thanksgiving, a project in Dallas served 2,500 traditional turkey dinners with all the trimmings at a center for at-risk youth. Mercy Chefs also hosts an annual 17 Days of Christmas event.
Hey, this is Gary, and it's day two here in Haiti.
Mercy Chefs has also worked overseas, including in Haiti. LeBlanc says they look at it all as ministry.
You know, I had a pastor friend one time in Haiti say that hurting people don't need to hear the gospel. They need to see the gospel. And so we try to act that out all the time. When Jesus, when he was on earth, didn't do a lot of talking, mostly he went around taking a moment to touch people.
Mercy Chef volunteers say they're pleased by the chance to give to others using their particular skills.
So when there's an opportunity that comes up like that, where I'm able to use something that I love to do, that God's given me a talent in doing, and just something that is something that really brings joy to me and other people at the same time, it's just an amazing feeling to be able to do that.
I recommend anybody to kind of do the same thing, is, you know, take a minute out and not think about yourself and go out and do something to help your neighbor.
And they say that message of giving is important, not just during Christmas time, but all year long. I'm Kim Lawton in San Antonio.
San Antonio also has big celebrations for Hanukkah. This year, Jews observe the 8-day Festival of Lights beginning at sundown December 24th. Hanukkah celebrates the successful revolt of the Jewish fighters, the Maccabees, in 165 BC against the Syrian Greeks who had conquered Jerusalem. When the Jews retook their temple and went to light the ritual candelabra, they had oil enough for only one day, but the lamp burned for 8. The Jewish text, the Talmud, directs Jews to publicize the miracle. San Antonio's Jewish community holds an annual Hanukkah on the River celebration to fulfill that requirement.
Hanukkah is unique in that one of the major aspects of the holiday is to publicize the miracle, and that is actually the significance of lighting the menorah, is that we light it in a public place or on a window that faces a public place to spread the miracle, to bring more consciousness to the outside world of the miracle of Hanukkah.
Welcome to the 17th annual Hanukkah on the River.
We came up with this idea to put a menorah on a riverboat and sail down the river, the San Antonio River.
The Riverwalk is the heart of San Antonio. So when we were thinking about doing something unique to San Antonio and bringing the menorah down to the Riverwalk, we said, we gotta have river barges. So we started with one boat, 40 kids, and within a couple of years, we had 10 boats, 11 boats with 500-600 people. It's really a great opportunity to celebrate in the San Antonio spirit.
It's only once in a while that you hit upon a program that really resonates with the community. That's really the beautiful part of Hanukkah on the River, that it brings together not only the Jewish community, but the entire community, the general community as well. And it's about bringing light into the darkness that surrounds us as we move through our daily lives. The more people that attend, obviously, the more effective is the publicizing of this miracle. Bigger the better.
They're doing a lot of physical and fun things, hands-on, in the center of San Antonio. And that's, I think, for the kids and for the passerbys. See, it's not just a spectacle of like Hanukkah in downtown. It's an actual hands-on fun thing in the center of San Antonio.
It is not only beneficial for the Jewish community, but we welcome the non-Jewish community as well to come and participate and hear the message of religious freedom.
We are all candles of Hashem, of God, to illuminate, to bring light and warmth, goodness and holiness to each other and to the world.
Baruch Ata Adonai.
When people stand together and see the menorah being lit, we're hoping to inspire them to a greater level of commitment and dedication to their own faith and tradition.
Finally, Pope Francis turns 80 this weekend. He said he wanted his birthday to be a regular working day. The Vatican is encouraging people to tweet him their best wishes at #Pontifex80. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you in anticipation of Christmas, music from a recent Messiah sing-along at Farlington United Methodist Church in Alexandria, Virginia.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.